You're Don Bradman, a podcast from SBS. In each episode, we'll have a look at champions, athletes, idolized by millions, that you might not know about. The kind of champion or hero next door. Welcome to Who's Your Don Bradman? Welcome to this month's edition of Who's Your Don Bradman? And like every month, I am joined with Dario Castaldo. How are you, Dario?
I'm great, Christoph. How are you?
I'm good. Two of the best things in the world, Italy and cycling today. You're loving Italy, I'm loving cycling.
Okay, yeah, that's fine.
We are talking about Gianni Bartali this month. Talk to us about why is he fit to be in this month, who's your Don Bradman?
Well, you know, Bartali is one of the greatest road cyclists ever. He's considered to be possibly the best until World War II started. Just prior to the invasion of Poland by Hitler, he had won in 1938 the Tour de France. He had won twice the Giro d'Italia in 36 and 37. So obviously the Second World War put a stop at his cycling career. And when it resumed, he won again once the Giro d'Italia and the Tour de France. That 1948 victory at the Grand Boucle helped rewriting a whole lot of history record books when it comes to cycling, but we'll expand on that later on. But he's even more fondly remembered, not just because of his victories as a cyclist, but because he saved the life of approximately 800 Italian Jews during World War II.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we didn't know about this story until he passed away. And we'll explain all this in this podcast. But first of all, let's go back in history. This is the story of Gino Bartali. July 1940. In the heat of the Tuscan summer, the future great name of Italian cycling was born. Gino Bartali, the third in a family of four children. He grew up in Ponte a Ema, a small village located in the southern suburbs of Florence. Every day, little Gino travels the 10 kilometers that separate him from his school by bike. Over the pedal strokes, he soon fell in love with the sport. At the age of 13, he began working as a bike repairer in a shop run by Oscar Casamonti, then an independent cyclist. The manager was visionary, and he quickly spotted the sporting qualities of his young employee, whom he pushed to take up competition. Gino Bartali then enrolled in a local cycling club, La Quilla di Ponte a Ema. The rest, as they say, is history. In 1935, he enrolled as an independent in the Milan-San Remo, one of the most famous races in Italian cycling. As an unknown and without a team to help him, he finished fourth. He could have done even better, but a bicycle failure when he was in the first position pushed him out of the podium. Fast forward on his career, he is remembered on the sporting field for having won three Giro d'Italia and two Tour de France, 10 years apart, between the 30s and the 50s. And also for his historic sporting rivalry with Fausto Coppi. It is clear that if the Second World War didn't happen, his palmarès would have been even bigger. Gino Bartali was a hero on his field of play. But wait a minute, this is only half of his story. And as we will discover in this podcast, Gino Bartali's action during World War II made him an immortal, one of the great amongst the greatest human beings. This podcast is the story of Gino Bartali. One of the greatest cyclists the world has ever seen, and probably one of the greatest human beings the world has ever seen, Gino Bartali. Talk to us, Dario, because you've actually met the man, I believe.
Yeah, because he died in the year 2000. I very much remember seeing him in person, as well as a lot on TV, because he was a big personality, of course, throughout all his life. He was from Tuscany, which is one of the areas, one of the regions of Italy where people are the most outspoken, for sure, most brilliant, particularly fun and cheeky. I don't know if any of this makes sense to you.
Let's talk about his personality. What was he like as a person?
Well, look, by the time I got to know him, he was obviously a very old man, a revered old man. But I got to say, although he was obviously a living legend, he was still somehow young at heart. He was still a true Tuscan who liked to crack a joke and who was extremely direct. I also asked an opinion to Marco Pastonesi, a famous Italian cycling expert who wrote for many years for the Italian newspaper La Gazzetta dello Sport and who's an author who actually met in person many times, Gino Bartali. And this is what he told me when I asked him to describe Gino Bartali from a human perspective.
Gino Bartali was Giuseppe Garibaldi on bike, the national popular hero. He was the 20th century in person. I met him a few times, the first time in Milano, and he was brilliant, alive, and very, very kind. And the last time was in Florence, in his apartment, and he was old, tired, ill, and we talked a lot about religion, about God, about the paradise.
So that was the voice of
Marco Pastonesi, an Italian cycling expert. Gino Bartali was also known because he was, again, as Tuscan people mostly are, very frank, very honest, very sincere, to the point of being blunt, not diplomatic in many ways.
We could call him old school today. Very old school.
Surely he looked old, at least in my memory, my imagination. But he would have been one of those old men that you would expect to be sitting on a chair in an Italian square in front of a bar with his old mates, gossiping about everything. Well, he was this sort of a personality, someone you would have wanted to hang around with.
Okay.
And so I asked, again, a description of Gino Bartali to another journalist of the Gazzetta dello Sport. And this is what Ciro Scognamiglio told us, explaining why Gino Bartali was so loved.
I think that he was so loved not only for his sportive results, but also for his personality, because he loved to tell things in a way really simple and really clear. And if something was wrong, he didn't hesitate to say that was wrong. It's famous in Italy, his quote, gli è tutto sbagliato, gli è tutto da rifare. That means that exactly when things were not correct, in his opinion, people were obliged to change things. I think for this special mentality, mainly, he was so loved.
So basically, he was the grandpa everybody wanted to have, yeah, because he's no limit, no boundaries.
Yeah, the grumpy grandpa.
Grumpy grandpa, exactly.
Getting back to his personality, he was nicknamed either the Pious Gino, because he was extremely religious, or Ginettaccio. Now, that's another very Italian thing, to give affectionate nicknames that do not sound affectionate. So Ginettaccio means the small bed Gino, when he was completely the opposite. He was pretty bulky, he was pretty big, pretty large, particularly for a cyclist. And he was such a good human being, so beloved for his achievements.
Let's talk about the career itself and the achievements on the bike. You mentioned earlier on he's won several Tour de France, several Giro. Let's put it out there first of all. He's, to this day, the only person to have won two Tour de France with 10 years difference, which is, when you think about it, how young the riders are today and how old he was when he won his last Tour de France. That gap, 10 years, it's somebody's career in cycling.
Yes, the fact that he won the Tour de France 10 years apart, it's one of the legendary achievements in his case. The other legendary thing is that he won his second Tour de France 26 minutes ahead of the second placed cyclist, which is the largest gap ever recorded in a single cycling Grand Tour between the first and the second placed cyclist. As we mentioned before, he was considered to be the greatest until World War II broke out. Then, when normality resumed, he was getting actually a bit old. He was 32, 33 when he won his third Giro d'Italia and his second Tour de France. So the list of his trophies, of his major wins, could have actually been even longer if there wasn't the World War II
Absolutely.
Break. And this is exactly what's been pointed out by Gazzetta dello Sport journalist Ciro Scognamiglio.
Well, certainly Bartoli is a living legend. He left us more than 20 years ago, but his personality is still living for the Italian sport and for the Italian society. About his sporting achievements, we can remember that he was able to win the Tour de France in 1938 and 1948, so 10 years differences also because it was during the Second World War, so imagine how many more Grand Tours Bartoli could have won without the Second Great War. Yeah,
absolutely. And basically could have added five or six to his belt.
Because of World War II, five Giro d'Italia were cancelled and seven Tour de France were not held. This is because the war in France lasted longer than in Italy. In his career, Gino Bartoli also won four times the Milano-San Remo and three times the Tour of Lombardy. But he was a pure climber. Some say one of the greatest.
Despite being big and bulky, which is normally the climbers, when people that know cycling will know that climbers, it's the power ratio to the weight. So the lighter you are, the more power you have to your weight. This is what you need. But he was bulky, Bartoli. Yes. He was a big man.
Yes. He was well over 1.70 meters and almost 70 kilos of weight, which, again, for a climber at the time, weren't quite common features. He definitely wasn't the small Gino. He was a nicely built grimper, a climber, a pure climber who won seven times the mountain classification at the Giro d'Italia. And again, this is still a record.
Yeah, the king of the mountain.
He was the king of the mountain seven times at the Giro. But to describe Gino Bartoli as a rider, Marco Pastonesi, the Italian journalist and author I spoke to, referred to a metaphor which was used at the time, which I found particularly hilarious.
Gino Bartoli was the best climber probably in the history of cycling. We used to say that he climbed with a snake in his back, because when he was on the bike, he moved himself and the other riders were astonished and afraid of his action.
A snake in the back. You can imagine, you know, wingling down his spine and making him go faster and just beating everybody, basically.
Yeah, when we talked about Guillermo Vilas, we actually mentioned the differences between the rackets used in the 70s and the rackets used nowadays. Go figure when it comes to cycling and the gap between the bicycles used nowadays and the ones used in the 30s and the 40s.
Yeah, yeah. Like four speed. Something ridiculous. I'm exaggerating, but the gearing system and the weight of the bike and everything were just on a different planet. Absolutely. So let's focus on he was a climber. He had so many successes. But Italian cycling, just to put into perspective, you guys also had another big champion, Fausto Coppi. And that rivalry animated the world of cycling. So how was it in Italy, first of all, to have two of the greatest cyclists ever made, inverted commas, at the same time, Fausto Coppi, Gino Bartoli?
I got to give you a little bit of context before, because this is probably something that outside Italy, people do not see clearly, do not understand about the country, how the country works. But Italy is a nation that loves to be divided. This is probably why we always struggle to form a stable government. We're having now the 67th government in 76 years of the Republic, almost one every year. Anyway, it's a tradition probably that goes back, according to some, to the Middle Age, when for a change Italy was divided into many small states, and there was a big power struggle throughout Europe, which in Italy translated into a further division between the Guelphs, the ones supporting the Pope, and the Ghibellines, who were instead supporters of the Holy Roman Empire, therefore the emperor. Now, this situation at the time contributed to this chronic strife between cities, but we can also apply this juxtaposition to Coppi and Bartali and try to figure out what it meant for Italians in the early 20th century to redirect this sort of need for rivalry and competition and antagonism into one of their biggest passions, which was cycling, and therefore being completely divided into supporters of Coppi, the Coppiani, and supporters of Bartali, the Bartaliani.
Let's summarize. Coppi was from the north, the rich part. Bartali was from the south, the poorer part. And that rivalry started even geographically.
Yes, although Tuscany is more center-north of Italy, so it's not quite a poor region. Anyway, even though Gino Bartali was considered to be a man of the people, coming from a low socioeconomic background, the difference and the contrast between the two cyclists was more based on their attitude, on their personality, and their beliefs. So Gino Bartali was so pious, he was extremely religious, so somehow it was, in a way, the Pope, whereas the Emperor was Fausto Coppi. But what is amazing is that the country actually loved them both, but was nevertheless divided. Hence, I asked Marco Pastonesi to explain, based on what cycling fans were divided into Coppiani and Bartaliani.
Gino Bartali and Fausto Coppi divided Italy and world of cycling in two sides, in two parts, in two halves. Bartali was considered pious and Coppi scandalous, Bartali Catholic and Coppi communist, and it was not true. Bartali was a wailer, was chattering, and Coppi was a silent man. Bartali came from Tuscany, and Coppi came from Piedmont, so another part of Italy, completely different, another culture. They were not friends, but they were very respectful and grateful colleagues, and they love each other.
That's a very good way to just summarize that rivalry, because it was a real drift in the country. But in fact, there was a lot of respect between them both. And this is summarized a lot in a picture where they're sharing a water bottle. And that's a very important moment, because people have tried to tabloids, as you would say today, they try to make it that they were fighting over this bottle. But in reality, it was a bottle of friendship.
Look, there's a massive, massive controversy about that. One thing is sure, Italy took sides between the religious, rural, Gino, and the self-professed.
Even the Pope.
Even the Pope
took sides.
That's amazing. Imagine nowadays. Even the Vatican took sides. It was at the time Pope Pius XII who naturally supported the religious Gino Bartali. And actually, he refused to bless one race because Coppi was riding in it. This is how bitter it was considered to be, this rivalry. But yes, you mention this personal rivalry, which at times has actually been really harsh, because there was an era in which performance-enhancing drugs were actually not yet forbidden, and Coppi even admitted of using doping, a situation that, given the rivalry, obviously infuriated Bartali. Bartali, who in response would actually often keep spies to ransack Coppi's room or to pick up Coppi's bottles to figure out what special drug Coppi was using, they apparently reconciled for the 1952 Tour de France, when one of the most iconic images in sports history was taken. Let's hear what Matthew Keenan told you about this very moment.
Doesn't matter whether you're looking at it from a French perspective, a Belgian perspective, or an Australian perspective. You look at the history books and you look at the photos that tell the story from that period, and it's Bartali and Coppi. Some of the photos of those guys riding up the mountains, and you know, we get excited about gravel roads now. Well, they didn't have a choice then. They are the sort of images that make you fall in love with the sport, and they're the sort of images that would sit really well in an art gallery. You could show some of the photos of Bartali and Coppi going side by side up the high mountains of the Tour or the Giro or any race in the world. to somebody that knows nothing about cycling, and they would just say, wow, that's a cool photo. They really captured the romance of the sport.
I must say, yeah, those photos of the 50s, when you see Coppi, we're talking about Bartali, but when you see Coppi with the little Ray-Bans and you know, the jerseys, and they were so tight, and it looks amazing. Coppi looks, still today, he looks like every cyclist would want to look.
Absolutely. He had these particularly large lungs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty big lungs. So that favored him. But getting back to the picture, we're talking about July 6th, 1952. Mm-hmm. Tour de France, the two cyclists we're talking about climbing Le Télégraphe, Le Col d'Isérin, and there's this photo showing Fausto Coppi holding a water bottle and reaching back to Gino Bartali. So the picture is actually amazing, because no matter how many times you look at the faces, you look at the hands, you look at the posture, you cannot possibly tell without a doubt who's giving the bottle to whom.
Yeah. And
can you imagine what this meant for Italians? So this image has been followed by an extensive debate over who was actually helping whom, who was being generous. And the reality is that this, again, is a proof of how bitter that rivalry could become. Coppi, at the time, said he was giving the bottle to Bartali. Bartali insisted that instead he gave the bottle to Coppi, and they argued forever about the episode, actually, until Coppi died of malaria in 1959. So this was just an amazing rivalry. This is really the cherry on the cake of this rivalry.
But can we settle the score once and for all? Who was better, or is it impossible to separate them because they are on two different sides of the cycling planet?
Look, it's a rivalry which probably in terms of numbers and achievements, it's relatively even. Both of them won two Tour de France. Coppi won 5 Giro d'Italia as opposed to Gino Bartali's 3. But we also have to take into account, and do not forget, that during Gino Bartali's heydays, 7 Tour de France and 5 Giro d'Italia were cancelled. On top of that, Fausto Coppi was 5 years younger than Bartali, which meant that when normality resumed after World War II, obviously Coppi challenged Bartali big time, because then it was Coppi who was in his prime, whereas Bartali was going towards the end of his career. Bottom line, the numbers could be interpreted. Although Gazzetta dello Sport journalist Ciro Scognamiglio tried to draw a line in the following way.
If you compare the palmarès, maybe Coppi had a larger palmarès. Coppi, from the sporting point of view, has been stronger than Gino, but also Gino, as a matter of fact, left an impact on Italian history really, really big.
And this is where we need to talk about this,
because
this impact that Gino Bartali left on Italian history goes way, way, way beyond the sport. It goes way beyond the data and the palmarès, as we said, about how many victories, how many stage wins, how many King of the Mountain classification, because Bartali actually proved that he was an amazing person during this period.
Surely Coppi was more successful, whereas Bartali, on one hand, couldn't compete in the best years of his sporting career, and at the same time had a larger impact on the society and on the history of Italy in terms of what he did outside the sport, particularly during World War II, when he saved the lives of over 800 Jews in Italy. But not just that, even before that.
We saw signs of this from Bartali very early on. In 1938, he refused to dedicate his victory to Il Duce, to Mussolini. And that was a big no, I guess, for the authorities. So he went up front and against the government in place at the time, even before he even started helping the resistance.
Yeah, which was twice as amazing, because as we mentioned, Bartali was a very religious man, and there are some controversial reports and descriptions about the relationships between the Vatican and the Mussolini government. Anyway, in 1938, in the middle of that year's Tour de France, the first Grand Boucle that actually Gino Bartali won, the Italian government published the so-called Manifesto on Race, which later led to the Jews being stripped of citizenship or any position in government, and that was the beginning of the so-called racial laws in Italy. And in that environment, Mussolini would have obviously wanted Bartali to express his support for the Italian government, and Gino Bartali was strong enough not to provide that public endorsement to Mussolini. What he did a few years later during World War II was even bigger in terms of act of courage. As in, when Germany occupied Italy in September 1943, Bartali worked as a courier for resistance, and his work included transporting forged, false identity documents for Jews, therefore helping hundreds of people escaping persecution courtesy of his hero status.
And the important thing as well to mention here as well is that he was so big in Italy at the time that he was able to tell the Germans that were occupying, even at the end of the war, occupying, or tell the army or to not touch his bike, to not mend his bike, because he was hiding things in the tubes. But he was saying, this is my race bike, do not touch it, this is calibrated for winning. So he took that excuse for hiding those documents and getting away with it.
So basically, that's why Bartali's greatest achievement are now believed to have taken place out of the competition, when no one was actually looking, because these counterfeit documents actually helped a lot of people escaping a potential deportation to Nazis' concentration camps. Let's hear Matthew Keenan's take on this amazing story.
He's mythical because he was more than a cyclist. So there's all the stories about what he did on the bike, winning the Giro, winning the Tour. But the greatest stories about Gino Bartali are around the Second World War and the work that he did there to support Jewish people within the Italian community or from other parts of Europe to stay away from the Nazis. So he was able to keep training. And what he would do is he would take his seat out, and down the seat tube, he would put papers, forged documents for Jewish people, to travel those documents across the country to keep those people safe. So winning the Tour de France is really cool. Winning the Giro is pretty cool as well. But saving people's lives and putting his own at risk throughout the Second World War, using his bike to do so in Italy, that is the myth and the legend of Gino Bartali.
I think he summarizes very well, Matthew Keenan. This is where legends are made. And incidentally, the legend was made after his death.
Only after his death. We've seen documentation that he traveled thousands of kilometers across Italy, traveling the roads between cities as far apart as Florence and Lucca, which are in Tuscany, but also Genoa, Assisi, and as far as the Vatican, as far as Rome. He actually put himself at huge risk by taking on this role. At one point, he actually was arrested and questioned by the head of the fascist secret police in Florence, where he lived. So for a period, he went into hiding, living actually in incognito in Umbria, not far from Assisi, in a place called Città di Castello. Basically, once again, Gino Bartali proved himself to be not just brave, but also selfless, put his own life at risk to save other people's lives. And this is how Marco Pastonesi described for us the reasons behind that gesture.
Gino Bartali, we say, was a postman of the peace. As you know, hiding fake documents to give a new identity for Jewish people, traveling on his bike from Florence to Assisi, then to Viareggio or even Genoa. Bartali was said saving possibly hundreds of people because he was a real Catholic, sharing love with love, solidarity, as a mission of peace. His life was in a real danger, and he used to say that the good things have to be done, not to be talked about.
This is very important because, as we mentioned now, he didn't want that story to be told until past his time. He thought this was not the thing to do. He told his son, and he swore him to secrecy and to not tell this story after he was gone. And then, since then, the state of Israel recognized him as one of the just.
Yes, Israel recognized Gino Bartali officially as righteous among the nations for his courageous actions in rescuing Jews during the Holocaust. It's an honor which, to give an idea, has been given to the likes of Oskar Schindler, the man who inspired the Academy Award-winning movie Schindler's List. This is how important his massive effort has been considered. Yet, when people were telling him, Gino, you're a hero, he would reply, no, I want to be remembered for my sporting achievements. Real heroes are others. I'm just a cyclist. So I asked Gazzetta dello Sport journalist Ciro Scognamiglio to explain not only why he put his life in danger, but also why he didn't want to share it publicly.
This was a part of his history that we discovered in the last years because Gino himself didn't do a lot of publicity in a certain way to this activity because he wanted to give himself to Jewish just because he thought that it was the right thing to do and not to have glory for this or to be known for this reason. Just something that he did for a question of justice from his point of view.
Good summary of exactly what Bartali thought at the time.
Yeah, he also hid a family, the Goldenberg family, in his cellar.
In his Florence house.
Exactly, in his own house for some times in 1943 until Florence was actually liberated in August 44. All the twists and turns of this story actually impressed a lot Matthew Keenan. He made a nice comparison saying that nowadays something like that would never, ever be possible, given a different mentality that a lot of celebrities and sports people to embrace.
Yeah, and it's much like people who you see that give really generously to various charities, and some of them scream it from the rafters and want everybody to know about it, and other people you don't even know that they're making those donations. He'd be one of those guys that if he was wealthy today, he'd make donations and nobody would know about it. He'd be no good in modern society with social media saying, look at me. He was the opposite of that. What a role model. And to keep that sort of stuff quiet, that's genuine hero stuff. Quiet tells us a lot about his qualities. He wasn't a look at me. He wasn't part of that generation. He was just a champion off the bike. Off the bike, he was a huge champion. On the bike, he won lots.
It's almost one reflection I would say is where are the Hollywood producers? Where is Netflix? Because there is a whole movie or series to be made about Bartali. Has that been the case a little bit in Italy? Has it been series? This story must have come out a little bit, yeah?
More than a little bit. There are TV series. One in particular was made about 15 years ago. And then there's, of course, a big literature, a lot of books about Gino Bartali. And there's actually one song, which is simply called Bartali. I don't know if you ever listened to it.
I have. but how legendary you become.
It's actually fun because the author, Paolo Conte, he stated that he never sang that song in France because if you listen to the lyrics, at some stage he says that while watching Bartali, the Frenchman gets pissed off. And he says that in a very direct way, using a bad word. So it's a song that we play very
often. I know, but I'm half Australian as well, so I'm not getting pissed off. You know?
So you know what? We already talked a lot about Bartali, but the story isn't over because this is so far just until World War II, when he was in his late 20s. But then the war, thanks God, ended and his career resumed.
In 1948, he won the Tour de France.
And that was amazing. This is another amazing chapter of his life and career because not only he ended up winning the 1948 Tour, his second and last Tour de France victory, which gave him the largest gap between victories in the history of the race and a massive gap between him and the second placed cyclist over 26 minutes.
Also, and he didn't know this at the time because Coppi didn't win his Tour de France yet, hadn't won his Tour de France yet, but is equal with Coppi in a number of Tour de France won. Two.
But what's even more amazing about that 1948 achievement is that apparently Bartali drew inspiration from a phone call that he received from the Italian Prime Minister, who literally asked him to win the Tour de France to prevent civil unrest in Italy after the assassination attempt of what was then the leader of the Communist Party, Palmiro Togliatti. Now, Italy in the Western world is known to have had the largest, the most influential, the most powerful, the most financially strong Communist Party. Again, talking about Western Europe. And its leader, Palmiro Togliatti, was such a prominent figure that even in the former Soviet Union, nowadays in Russia, there's a city called Togliatti, after this former leader of the Italian Communist Party, who in 1948 was almost killed in a terror attack. And to prevent what was at the time considered to be a big, big risk of a civil war in Italy, the Prime Minister called Gino Bartali.
I love your country, Dario.
And pushed him. So I do. So I love it. And motivated him to give his best to try to win the Tour de France. And of course, Bartali did. He gave absolutely his very, very best, considering that he arrived in Paris with that huge gap we mentioned already of 26 minutes plus over his closest rival. So I talked about this story with the Gazzetta dello Sport journalist Ciro Scognamiglio and asked him basically if Gino Bartali was effectively aware of what was happening in Italy and whether he can tell if this is completely true, that Italy was on the verge of a civil war and that Bartali's victory somehow helped prevent it.
It's really impossible to understand if this has been history, real history or legend. In my opinion, it's a mixture, but without any doubt, the victory of the Tour de France of 1948 arrived in a very difficult moment for Italy, for the tentative of murder of Palmiro Togliatti. And I think that it's true that the Italian spirit was really better after this marvelous victory of Gino in the Tour.
That's just an incredible fact that whether or not this is true, this could have been an unrest. Of course, the whole spirit of the country would be lifted up. Would that be the case today if an Italian won the Tour de France? You know, when the others won, you know, did that actually lift up in terms of the how cycling is important in Italian life?
Well, probably not. First of all, because politics is surely less important than it was back then. Political confrontation based on ideology was extremely harsh, to the point of being violent. And of course, the attempted murder of the leader of the Communist Party at the time in which the country was again divided into between the Christian Democrats and the Communists surely had the potential of igniting a civil war or a civil unrest. And secondly, because cycling is less important now than it was back then, maybe something like that could happen in Italy, would more likely be dependent on soccer, on football. But in terms of how a sporting achievement, a massive sporting achievement, can make a country feel as a whole, I think history is full of similar examples. And getting back to the impact that the 1948 Tour de France victory by Gino Bartali had on the Italian history and society, few years later, another Italian prime minister, a very influential and powerful one called Giulio Andreotti, he actually admitted that Bartali's success helped easing the tensions. That's what he said.
Yeah, absolutely. So he died age 85 in May 2000, the 5th of May exactly, 2000. So he died at a certain age, but he turned that millennium. And that's, I think, important when you look at the history, that he was able to still make the bridge into the new millennium, because he had an enormous life. What do we know about his final days, the final few years of Bartali? He had a heart problem, yeah?
Yes, he had heart problems. He had a very distinct voice with a sort of a hoarseness because he had damaged his vocal cords. Nevertheless, he was sort of omnipresent on TV, not just when it was about cycling, because he became a TV personality. As we said, he was very old, but he was still lively. It was still fun to hear. And he was obviously a testimony of a different era. It was a testimony of the past.
He was an icon.
Absolutely. And he was just simply loved, which is obviously something that Bartali has experienced throughout all his life. Although, As a journalist and writer and author, Marco Pastonesi told us, maybe he wasn't even fully aware of the true impact that he could have, whether it was as a cyclist, whether it was in 1948, or whether it was in 2000.
I don't know if Bartali was conscious about his power, his fame, his greatness. Neither in 1948, during the Togliatti case, nor later. In his last days, he took part of a popular evening TV show. Actually, he was just himself. Genuine, terrific, outstanding. He was Gino Bartali, the unique, the original, the great.
So just to diffuse, he didn't do Dancing with the Stars, yeah?
He wasn't there on TV just yet, but I remember him doing something similar.
Yeah, I can imagine him. And that's not a joke. I don't know, but I can imagine the persona being so vibrant in this. If we talk about the legacy, what is his legacy today in Italy? Gino Bartali, if you talk to a younger Italian, maybe cycling fan or not cycling fan, how is he remembered?
I don't know, to be honest, if and how young Italians would know him. What I know for sure is that anyone of my age, anyone who had a little glimpse of him, even just as a TV personality, know a lot about him. And surely look up at him as an absolute legend. In terms of what he means for Italians in general, let me give you an example. In Milan, at the entrance of the Gazzetta dello Sport headquarters, Gazzetta dello Sport, which is a daily sport newspaper.
Pink newspaper,
which belongs to the same company that organizes the Giro d'Italia. So it's obviously strictly, very closely connected to cycling. And quite inevitably, at the entrance again, there's this gigantic image of Bartali and Coppi exchanging that famous water bottle that we already talked about. So it's no surprise that the company that organizes the Giro d'Italia and that owns two of the largest Italian newspapers at the entrance of his massive headquarters in Milan showcases that very photo as an iconic symbol. It's less obvious, though, that the same picture, it's on display in thousands of Italians, restaurants, pubs, you name it, around the country, because that proves how Bartali and Coppi and their rivalry are inherently part of the Italian culture and identity. To some extent, we could say that they even contributed to shape it at the beginning of the 20th century.
So today he's still an icon. Younger generation will still see this person as an icon.
Absolutely. Of course, Italy has had other great cyclists and even great climbers like Marco Pantani.
Nibali.
Of course, Nibali in more recent times. But of course, the name of Gino Bartali is surrounded by this mythological aura determined by the rivalry with Coppi, the iconic picture, the gravel roads, all his amazing activities during World War II, and everything else we've been talking about throughout this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's listen to Matthew Kinnan, and he talks about exactly this, remembering Bartali, and do we do enough? Is it enough done from the world, from the younger generation to remember someone like Gino Bartali?
I think we do it pretty well, but maybe we could do it slightly better. I think we're getting better at doing it in the last 10 years. We've seen a big improvement in where a stage in a particular race is going to and celebrating the rider from that period. We're pretty good with recency effect of remembering those that are really recent. It's remembering the real pioneers from a lot further back that is the bigger challenge, because their families often have also passed away. So it's harder to make that connection. But we learn a lot from telling the stories of our history. I wonder what Bartali would be doing now with the situation in Ukraine. Maybe what we can learn from the history from what he did can be a role model for us still today.
I like the word role model and these words from Matthew Kinnan. You know, if you just sit back and relate to what I just said, this is the enormity of a life like the one for Gino Bartali.
And that's what we're here for with Who's Your Don Bradman.
Exactly. Just bring the icons back and teach the people I might not know about those iconic champions and just tell them a thing or two. Thank you, Dario, for joining us.
You're welcome.
This was the life of Gino Bartali.